What is going on, everybody? Three and Out Podcast. That's the show. John Middlecoff, that's me. I know we get a lot of new listeners coming from Colin's podcast. I appreciate everyone listening. The numbers are going up. And I just can't thank everyone enough for supporting and listening to the podcast. And I enjoy doing it. It's why I wait to record the podcast till after the Monday night game and after the Thursday night game. Though I may cheat a little and record some during the day. But when you do that, like today, and you do segments on would you trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, Jalen Ramsey drama, you get traded during the game. So luckily, you can press delete and re-record a segment. So we'll dive into that, the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade. And ultimately, while I think it's a little reckless by the Steelers, you know, if I was, my days of being a fan are over. But, and really, you're just kind of a fan of where you're born and how you grow up, right? You know, if you're born in the Bay Area, you're probably going to like the Niners. If you're born in Texas, you're probably going to like the Cowboys. It would be pretty cool to be a Steeler fan just because they carry themselves like winners. So we'll dive into that. We'll dive into Jalen Ramsey. Mahomes, people have been using this Warriors comparison for a while. I'll tell you why him, if you know, if he's a front runner right now to win an MVP back-to-back years, and that would make the comparison to Steph even that much truer. Everyone's making a big deal over Breeze and Roethlisberger. I mean, as they should. I mean, those guys are out and big-time players, but they're old. And like, I think sometimes we discount these guys are ancient. I mean, Breeze is 40 years old. 40 years old. I get it was a freak injury, but I think we've lost a little touch. And part of it's Brady and even Adam Vinatieri that the Colts talked out of retiring. You know, Brady's 42, Vinatieri's 46. Like, that is not normal. We've kind of jumped the shark with these old guys playing a young man's sport. And Julio Jones, a lot of people talked about how Julio Jones' contract would change the NFL. Like, I got news for everyone. There's only one Julio Jones. And just Kirk Cousins, he's been a disaster. Then I'll dive into just some things that I saw around the league on Sunday. I just picked out like five or six things that kind of fire me up or excite me or maybe places I was wrong, things that I'm excited to keep on watching, and just little things I picked up around the league. And then like always, Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. And we open it to you guys. So you slide up in the Instagram, the DMs, and I answer your questions here. Really, from this Monday Night Football game, I guess starting with the Browns, they don't look right to me. You know, I mean, they are a team just loaded with talent. There is no disputing just the talent on the squad. Odell Beckham's a freak. I mean, it's literally highway robbery that they got him for pick 17, some late third-round pick, and a box safety. Like, Dave Gettleman, you're an idiot. Like, what? That's the easiest trade Dorsey will ever make. Myles Garrett is a freak show, but he just commits a ton of penalties, and he's a little reckless out there. But there's no disputing their talent. Offensive weapons all over the place. Baker, to me, feels a little off. And, you know, sometimes when you just talk as much as him, everyone's going to be out to get you, one. And two, this league's really hard. You know, you get so many new wrinkles. It's just difficult to play in the NFL. So when you're just a pump your chest quarterback before you've ever done anything, you know, you're going to put yourself in tough positions. The NFL is hard enough to begin with. And I like his brash and cockiness. If you got it, flaunt it. I'm never, be who you are. I'm a big believer in that. Like, don't be fraudulent. I think it's why traditional media is dying so much, because of how fake everyone is on TV. And I think there's a lot of people, you know, in this day and age, that I think it's a big reason why Barstool is crushing it. I mean, I've been able to do my own thing. I'm just being myself. I despise being fake for the camera. And that's what I do respect about Baker. But I also think you have to be smart about it. And at the end of the day, in football, more than any other sport, your head coach has such a big impact on the outcome of every game, of your season, of the team. This isn't baseball where the GM runs it. This isn't basketball where LeBron James could carry me or you to an NBA championship if we were the coach. I just don't see it with Freddie Kitchens, man. I just don't. And I think the downfall of this Browns team, and they got some flaws, right? Their offensive line is a little bit of a question mark, but there's no disputing the talent. They have high-end talent at several positions. I just don't see it with the head coach. And we know they have a big ego GM. Yeah, their schedule gets tough. I still think they'll compete, you know, for a playoff spot, But the more you watch them, I start to wonder, like, by no means are they some lock playoff team. By no means are they some lock 9-7 team. Like, they're going to have to play well to get to 9 wins. I think most of us thought before the season, like, yeah, they'll be a 9-10 win season. Two games in, it's going to be a major work in progress for a head coach that's never proved a damn thing. I mean, he's been a head coach now, what, 2 games? Yeah, he had never been a play caller at this time a year ago. He was still like a month away from that. Think about that. And then the Jets, I mean, I guess God just doesn't want Jets fans to have good things. You know, the quarterback's quarantined at home. Trevor Siemian looks like his ankle gets broken. As a buddy in the league texts me who's been around Gase, he's like, well, Gase doesn't handle adversity well. And you can see it on his face. And there's a guy that's at the office 24-7. Like, Adam, this is why I could never be a coach. How could you show up to the office tomorrow at 5:30 or 6 in the morning and try to get ready? The Jets play the New England Patriots this week. I think someone sent me a text. They were an 18.5-point underdog. They're probably going to start Luke Falk, who had never been active for an NFL game until tonight. Listen, I'm not the biggest Le'Veon Bell fan, the way he handled everything last year, but he is a star player. He is a baller. And it sucks for him. So it's like, yeah, you gave up $14.5 million. You got your $27 million this year, you know, for over 2 years. You got a 2-year $27 million contract. I know the internet says one thing. That's the true numbers. 2 years, $27 million to be on a team that's probably going to win 3 or 4 years games. And Joe Douglas took this job. It's going to be a challenge. Now that Darnold's out for the foreseeable future, the Jets aren't going to win many games. And clearly the Patriots are the cream of the crop in their division, and the Bills, who I'll touch on later, are much better, especially now that Josh Allen's getting more and more reps. They're just better coached. Sean McDermott's better than Adam Gase. Their coaching staff, their toughness, they're just more of a unit. I mean, here's one issue with the Jets. 3 or 4 days ago, when Greg Williams was talking all that smack about Odell Beckham, which one, it's like, Greg, I was hard on the Browns week one, but if you watch the game, Odell looked fantastic. And as you saw tonight, like, Odell's a baller. He's an elite talent. Now, is he overrated in the sense that he hasn't proved it for the last 4 or 5 years consistently? For sure. But a big reason, two big reasons. One, he's been hurt. And two, he played with Eli freaking Manning and the Giants' worst offensive line, like, in the league. So, his talent is special. And when he's on the field, if you give him a capable quarterback, lights out. He's proven that over and over and over. He's a little bit of a diva. Well, I got news for you. When you're good enough, you can act like a diva. There's a reason tens can be a little high maintenance. If you're high maintenance when you're a 4, you might not get a date. But, you know, if you're a 9 or a 10, yeah, you can be a little bit of a pain. And people deal with you. That goes for guys and girls. You know, I mean, Brad Pitt or whatever might be high maintenance. Was not being discriminatory here. But at the end of the day, like Greg Williams mouthing off about Odell Beckham Jr., the Jets had to take it down from their website. They wiped the slate clean of that. You can't even find it unless someone tweeted it out or copied it, you know, live when he was at the podium. Why? Because it's just stupid. It was moronic to say that. One, Greg, you're not the head coach. You don't get to set the message like that about another team's player. But two, his ego's so big, he's a little bit out of control, and your team's not very good. So why would you mouth off? It was stupid at the time. Even dumber now. And the Jets are just, and this is a long year. So Joe Douglas, I know he got $4 million a year and 6-year contract. Him and Adam Gase have made generational money. Adam Gase is a multimillionaire. His kids won't need to worry about cash. Same with Joe Douglas now. But their life sucks. I mean, it really does. These next 3 or 4 months are just awful. So the money is great, and it's really fantastic. All of us would love to have that. I mean, there might be some millionaires listening to this, but we'd like that money. But it's being on a team that's going to win 3 or 4, that's a long, long season. So I hope they're in for this one. I mean, Joe Douglas, now you got a huge race, but the Eagles was a pretty good gig, you know? Now, Adam Gase didn't have another job. But he also didn't sign up for this thing when he thought Sam Darnold, or at the time he didn't know Sam Darnold was going to get mononucleosis heading into week 2. You know, I guess, you know, you just can't make out with any random chicks anymore without getting a little mono in New York City. But overall, just a terrible Monday Night Football game. No other way around it. And God, this Monday Night Football crew, as a buddy in the NFL texts me, they wouldn't even be a top 5 college crew on ESPN. I started thinking about it. I'm like, you're right. This, I mean, Tessitore acts like it's every play's the the last play of the Super Bowl. Like, Joe, not every play is a walk-off grand slam in the World Series, buddy. Just take a deep breath. And I don't think Booger has any clue what's going on. I really don't. It's just, and I'm not trying to, that job's hard. I could never be a play-by-play guy. I have no, ambition to be an analyst. I couldn't do it. I don't know enough football. But I do know as a consumer, I just like to be entertained. And we know what good is, and we know what bad is. And that Monday Night Football broadcast is like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. It is cringeworthy. It really is. And I've tried to be open-minded, like, John, don't be so negative. It's bad. This is Monday Night Football. Millions of people watching us, and they're forcing us to watch that crap. I feel for everyone that powered through it today. I try to hit mute, but I like to hear what's going on. That was probably the highlight of just how terrible they are. Let's talk about players, trades, and everything that's going on. One, I think there's somewhat of an overreaction going on right now in social media. The NFL's about player empowerment. Have you guys not followed pro sports? The NFL is no different than the NBA or Major League Baseball. Players, throughout the history of time, have demanded trades, have asked for trades. New administrations have come into buildings and had fire sales. Like, this is not new. So Jalen Ramsey has asked for a trade. Everyone's like, this is the time of player empowerment. No, it's not. The three guys drafted above, or four guys drafted above Jalen Ramsey in his draft, right, were Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. Well, they went vice versa, right? Jared went one, Carson Wentz went two, Joey Bosa went three, and Zeke went four. Well, two of those guys have got historic amounts of money in the two quarterbacks. Zeke got broken off, and clearly Joey Bosa will probably at the end of this season. So Jalen, you know, is mad, partly probably hates his coach, doesn't want to be there anymore, but also he knows that they're not going to pay him. So he's like, guys, I want out. Now he's yelling at his coach. There's probably more to it, but it's over money. So he demands a trade. He's not the first player to demand a trade, and he sure as hell won't be the last. So when you read this, like, it is time, and I see guys, like smart guys, Warren Sharp, people writing like, player empowerment era. No, he's an elite player. He wants a trade. It's really not that weird. It's over money. Did Khalil Mack really want to leave Oakland? No, he wanted his money. So if you weren't going to pay him, someone was. And until, you know, that's how he ended up in Chicago. Now, again, more variables. Gruden didn't want to pay him. Maybe he did. Mark Davis broke, might not have had the cash. Who knows? A lot more to it. But at the end of the day, you know, money talks, everything else walks. So it always comes down to money. And I think Jalen Ramsey, one, he didn't want to show up to camp without a new contract. Did, kind of reluctantly, remember, shows up in a Brinks truck. And now he's fighting with his coaches. A lot of stuff's probably carrying over based on the contract. I think it's based on the contract. You can say, well, they're making him play zone. He wants to play man. All that BS. Great. He's an elite player. He wants his money. Minkah Fitzpatrick traded for a first-round pick to Pittsburgh. Let me say this. I admire organizations like the Steelers. They carry themselves like winners. They are winners. They're one of the standards, not just in football, but in pro sports. They don't worry about the draft. They would rather eat their own puke than say the word tank. They don't think like that. So if you're a Steelers fan, I don't know why I said eat your own puke. I just tried to think of something that you could visualize that would make you really gross. Because I think the word thrown around tanking, especially with the youth on social media, now I mean, I'm making myself sound old. Like, I understand tanking, especially late in the season when you're losing. But like what the Dolphins are doing, like that sucks. I mean, it really just sucks for the fans. It just sucks. There's no way around it. It's not fun. In most organizations, I've worked for one organization in the league, Philadelphia Eagles. Jeffrey Lurie would jump off the Walt Whitman Bridge before he tanked. Would not fly. The Pittsburgh Steelers ain't into tanking. Seattle, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, ain't tanking. Belichick wouldn't even know how to spell the word tank. Andy Reid doesn't even know what that means. Sean Payton would laugh in your face. So winners don't think like that. But when unforeseen things happen, and in football, when you lose a starting quarterback, especially when you have a good one in Ben Roethlisberger, that changes everything. There is a chance when you're playing a backup, it might not go well. And it's not like you're 2-0 right now. You're 0-2. So if you just look at it, you got to take the emotion out, and I get it would be fresh, right? You just lost Roethlisberger. Mason Rudolph came into the game, actually didn't look that terrible, had a couple moments. You go, we can still keep this together. No one's running away from us. in the AFC North. We'll assume Baltimore will lose this week to the Chiefs, and we're still alive in 0-2. So I admire and respect that mindset, but I also think it's a little reckless to train a first round pick, given that less than 24 hours ago Roethlisberger went away for the season. And Mason may be good, and he may not be. We just don't know. We've seen countless quarterbacks, especially from that program, I guess not that program, just one quarterback, who's Brandon Whedon, not translate to the league. So when you're going to be reckless about something big picture, like if you told me the Eagles, the Chiefs, Seattle had traded a first-round pick, I did a little math today. Seattle is 77-36 since 2012. All they do is win. The Eagles are good. The Chiefs are clearly one of the best two teams in the league. If a team like that wanted to trade a first-round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick, who just went 12th a year ago and is, you know, above-average starter, I don't know if he's quite elite, but he's a really good player. I would completely understand it. I really would. Because you go, well, we're going to be drafting in the mid to late 20s anyway. Hell, ideally 30th, 31st, or 32nd. We won't even have a player anywhere close to Minkah Fitzpatrick's caliber. It would make sense. But the Steelers, listen, it's pretty clear that it is probably like, I wouldn't say 50% chance, but it's definitely above 25% that they're going to be drafting in the top 10. There is a decent chance that you're going to give Miami a pick that is better than the pick that they used on Minkah Fitzpatrick 2 years ago. Think about the return on the investment on that. Now, again, I do not condone or accept what Miami's doing. I care. The way I judge you on things is, one, what's good for business, and what's good for business is usually good for the fans. And tanking like this is an embarrassment. Now, there's been countless articles written and stats out that the Miami Dolphins record, I think these last like 20 years, is exactly 500. They are the ultimate average team. But still, in the NFL, the way the parity in football, how every team has money, you can sign free agents. I don't like it. I don't like it at all, to be honest with you. Though they do like this trade, like the Laremy Tunsil trade. Listen, is every player available in sports? Like if I wanted Mike Trout and I offered him, I don't know, 30 players, my entire minor league system, maybe they say yeah, right? If I offered you, there's probably some sort of offer that might make Joe Lacob think about trading Steph Curry. Now, it would have to be nuts, right? It would have to be like 10 first-round picks and Giannis. But everyone has a price. Didn't they say in The Godfather, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse? So, I don't think they set out to trade Laremy Tunsil, but when someone offers you two ones and a two, you know, I get you think about it. Now, I wouldn't have done it because you go, well, the Texans are probably going to be pretty good and drafted in the 20s. So those picks in the 20s are not all equal. There is a big difference between getting a first rounder that's pick 11 and pick 28. Like, it was cool trading Amari Cooper until that pick was 27th. It was cool trading Khalil Mack until that pick was 23rd. But this one, I'd say, I'd feel pretty good about this. If you're like, if you are going to go full tank, and a team offers you a first-round pick, and you go, there's a pretty decent chance this thing's going to be top third in the draft, I get how you do it. I think this was a pretty easy trade for Miami, and I'm not condoning what they're doing. But this one, a guy that doesn't want to be there, who doesn't, for whatever reason, fit, like it, whatever, and you get a first-round pick from a team that you start doing the math, and you're looking at their schedule, like, they're going to beat the Niners? They're a 7-point dog right now. So Vegas doesn't think they have a chance. Now, I'm not saying that they're based on Vegas. What does that really mean? Dogs win all the time. Mason Rudolph's going to come out to Levi Stadium to a 49er team that's kind of rolling right now. Now, does Minkah Fitzpatrick help? Sure. But dramatically improve them? I think if it ends up going, like we all kind of think, not going to go that well, this could be a pretty disastrous trade. And I think at the end of the day, they made this trade just solely on emotion. Despite, you can respect the way their organization thinks and operates. I would imagine most people listening to this, non-Steeler fans, do. If you follow sports, especially if you follow the NFL, you're going to respect the hell out of the Steelers. What they stand for, toughness, consistency, big picture stuff, standing behind their coach, always winning, the fan base, sweet Steeler games. It's cool. Like, we all respect them. But I think this is a little reckless and one of the dumbest things they've done probably in recent memory. Okay, let's talk about Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs offense. And one comparison that's out there, and I think a lot of people just throw this out there nationally, is the Chiefs are basically the Warriors of the NFL. And Mahomes is kind of the Steph Curry. And as someone that's watched every Warrior game over the Steph Curry dominant era, literally every second, besides some blowouts, of the Curry era, I actually think the comparison, I've been using this for a while, is perfect. But I actually think it's never had more merit and had a closer parallel than it is having right now. Because Steph Curry, Steve Kerr's first year, was unreal. Won the MVP, they won the championship. It was one of the most remarkable seasons as I'm a diehard basketball guy I've ever witnessed. He was beyond special. Then the following year, that was the same year the Warriors won 73 games. They ended up losing to LeBron. You know, they still talk about it. They were up 3-1. Curry came back, and it was clear by before Christmas, it was like, holy shit, this guy is better. And if you watched him in Kerr's first year, you would have never, like, that's as good as it gets. And he came back better. And it's the great part about pro sports at the highest level with the best players is we often talk about a guy going into the lab. And unlike like in my profession or whatever you do, we have so long to improve on whatever we're doing. You know, as long as I'm going to be able to talk, hopefully I'll have this job. As long as you're able to sell, you'll have whatever job. And you can read about it if you are, you know, driven by improving at your job and getting better. Time is kind of on your side. Now, you could argue time's never, anything can end at any moment. I get all that. I just mean most people work, you know, 50s, 60s. Like if you're in your 30s or hell, even your 40s, you got years to improve. In pro sports, you really have a small window. Star NBA player, star baseball player, star football player. Your peak years, you could argue, like your legit peak years are probably under 7 to 8 years. So every one of those offseasons, now we've had outliers, Brady, LeBron. Is Steph going to have 10 straight peak years? Who knows? He's had about 5 or 6 straight. You know, maybe he's got 3 or 4 more left. But what Tiger for all those years. What I think inspires us to make us, you know, love and admire and talk and watch and consume these guys is that the best in the business always go back into the lab and improve. And only a small, like once you get to a certain level, I've never been a pro athlete. I can imagine it gets pretty difficult to take steps. And I think once you get to a certain level, you're really just trying to take incremental steps. Once you get to as good as like Brady is, he's just working on getting, you know, it's cliche, but like 1% better. Like that was crazy about Steph's second MVP season. It felt just the eye test. He was 20% better. In the previous year, out of like 100%, it felt like he was like a 98. And last year, Mahomes, I don't think could have been much better. If on the 100 scale, if this is Madden, I would have given him like a 97 or 98. And it feels like he's come back, and he's not 1 or 2% better. It feels like he's 20% better. Like he is on a completely different level. And you only get this in sports so often when you're talking about the highest of highs, right? The MVP level player. We saw it countless times with LeBron James in his peak before LeBron became consumed with money and just about his brand and what he's doing in LA. When he went to Miami, he'd go into the lab in the offseason and he just had one of the great 4 or 5 year stretches, those 4 years in Miami and the first two in Cleveland, when he was just chasing greatness. It's why I love Tiger Woods, because forever Tiger Woods cared. His number one priority was always winning. And he'd go into the lab, he'd change his swing. Michael Jordan would come out every single year with just different pitches. It was incredible. And that's what we're witnessing right now with Mahomes. He went into the lab, whether it was, and it might just have been mentally. I know Coach Reed, you talk to those guys in Kansas City, like, God, he's even better. And you hear that, you're like, God, he threw 50 touchdowns. He was the MVP. How's he going to get better? We've seen countless examples of these quarterbacks that have won MVP. Like Matt Ryan couldn't get any better. Cam Newton, that was the peak of his life. Mahomes, was that just kind of scratching the surface? Now, I think it was more last year than scratching the surface, but that's not what we're going to see. This guy is better. And I'm watching him against the Oakland Raiders, and he flipped a switch in the second quarter and had 5 straight drives. Now, one was called back where he hit bombs, which what felt like the minimum the ball flew in the air was 50 yards. I mean, honestly, it probably was averaged. I'm sure there's next-gen stats about this. 35-plus yards in the air. It was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen live in an NFL game. Deep bomb after deep bomb after deep bomb. And only one of the five were a guy that was just kind of wide open. Most of them were relatively highly contested balls. Like the corner was either stride for stride or a step behind. So the ball had to be placed pretty perfectly. And I got news for you. The ball was placed perfectly every freaking time. It was, and I text a guy on the Chiefs staff. He's like, I just text him, have you ever seen anything like that? And this guy's been in the league for 15 plus years. And his response was, no, never in my life. My jaw hit the floor. And this guy, like Steph Curry, whatever you think about the Warriors and kind of what they become with Kevin Durant, I don't blame you. And I get there's envy and jealousy all those years once Kevin Durant showed up. But I will promise you, what Steph Curry stands for as a teammate, for how hard the freaking guy works, and how remarkable he is as a player, if you weren't emotionally hating the Warriors, I think you could take a step back and you can admire and respect how good the guy is. Because he's freaking incredible. When it's all said and done, he's going to go down as the second best point guard ever. That's not an opinion, that's a fact. You know, how many point guards, check the resume. 3 chips, 2 MVPs, and I don't know if he's slowing down at least for a couple more years. Like Patrick Mahomes, I feel pretty confident saying this, if he doesn't get hurt, is going to be a generational player. And we say this a lot, and I've been wrong on this before. I kind of jumped the gun a little on Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm going to pull back. Not that I'm down on Jimmy in the sense that I just anointed him as a top five quarterback probably too fast. Like, I've seen enough with Patrick Mahomes, especially when I factor in the variables. As Tony Romo said yesterday, Andy Reid might be the greatest offensive coach ever. Now, I think Andy would probably push back on that, but I think we all can admit or acknowledge, probably the right word, that Andy, you know, the Bill Walsh, I mean, is one of the best offensive play callers in the history of the sport. And clearly right now in the league, full of great young and old play callers all over the league, he's probably the cream of the crop right now. Just as a play caller, play to play with the weapons that he has. And then, like I said, the other variable is the weapons that he has. He has Travis Kelce, who is a rare player. I don't know what Travis, I don't have his combine information in front of me, but when Travis plays, he plays at a 4-4 speed, at a size which no one can stop him. You can't put small safeties on him, he'll toss around. You put longer corners on, he's too physical, and he can run by him. He's just a freak. Sammy Watkins, they have resurrected slash kept healthy, and he looks like a monster. They have just the kid they drafted in the 3rd round, Hardman, I think that's how you say his name, can absolutely scoot. Their running backs are legit. They got Cheetah, who will come back in a couple weeks. They're just absolutely loaded. Their offensive line's good. It's the ultimate combination of, one, a generational talent who truly wants to be great and is going in the lab mentally and physically in the offseason, little Tiger Woods-like. Then factor in a great coach with a good system, great system, and the weapons. Like, it's the ultimate combination. Kind of like Steph Curry. Steve Kerr came, turns out to be a really good coach, opened up the system for him, let him eat, and the rest is history. The rest is history. It's like, if this guy stays healthy, as Michael Jordan once said, the ceiling is the roof. The only guy I think in this league, under 30, that even has a chance to be on his level is Carson Wentz. Deshaun Watson's not, can't be as good as this guy. Dak Prescott, who's clearly improved, can't be as good as this guy. Jared Goff, who's a really good player, can't be as good as this guy. Now, Carson, you watched last night. Like, I don't have the box score in front of me or the other night. I don't care how many picks he throws. When Carson's on and the switch is flipped, his good, beside Mahomes for all the young guys, is on a different level. Like, he can put the team on his back and carry them to the promised land. Now, his problem is he takes a ton of hits, and clearly he gets worked sometimes because he keeps plays alive and gets destroyed. So that would be my red flag on him, just can he stay healthy. But when he's healthy, his high end might not quite be Mahomes' high end, but it's pretty damn close. But I'm pretty confident right now through 2 weeks, Mahomes is the heavy MVP favorite. They play Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, this week at home. If they take care of business there, I don't see how this guy doesn't win back-to-back MVPs. So the example of the Steph Curry Warriors and the Kansas City Chiefs, well, you're looking at the Steph Curry of the team. The top teammate, the most likable guy, the biggest superstar, and at the end of the day, the most talented one. So get ready for the first back-to-back MVP we've seen in the NFL in a long time. Okay, you know, many say age is just a number. My 35th birthday is, hell, less than a month away, getting old. But as a wise man once said, a.k.a. Warren Buffett, you should be better in the second half of your life. You just have more experiences, you've lived more life, you should have a better experience just around people. The second half of your life should be better. And I agree with that. As I've gotten older, my life has only got better. Gained more wisdom, have more control of my life. Actually, being a single guy, I like dating older women. They tend to have more wisdom. I enjoy being around them more. But I don't discriminate. That's like I wouldn't date younger women. But just, I like older women. I like all women, really. But you get my drift. In life, as you age, it's a good thing. You know, most people in most walks of life make more money the older they get. That's what makes pro sports so unique and so the opposite of everything else in society. You actually make the most when you're younger. Like most professional athletes, unless you're like Michael Jordan, the most money they'll ever make in their life is like 27, 28, 29 years old. It's the opposite for me and you. Like my income just keeps kind of doubling or growing at a rate the older I've gotten. That's most people. But I do think that we've kind of lost touch with age in sports, where we just think these guys should be able to play forever. Yesterday, Roethlisberger went down. I guess I'm recording this on Monday, so if you're listening, a couple days ago. Drew Brees is now out. Roethlisberger obviously out for the season. Drew Brees is out for a considerable amount of time with a messed up finger. And everyone's like freaking out, like guys are going down. I'm sorry, Drew Brees is 40 years old. 40 years old. Now, it was a freak injury. Like, he didn't get hurt, quote unquote, was because of age. But what Brady is doing should be an all-time outlier. This is not normal. And I understand that the quarterback position is more protected than ever. So I do think guys are going to play 35, 36, 37, 38 at a higher level. But just look at other guys. Like, Eli Schott. Flacco stinks. You know, Roethlisberger had this kind of innocuous injury in terms of the way he threw it. Is it that crazy? He's 37 years old. 37. Like, if he was 25, 26, 28, I'd be like, God, that's just a freak deal. But is it that freaky? These guys are really, really old. They really shouldn't be playing at this age when you really take a step back and think about it. Like, look at Rodgers. I think we're all starting to notice with Rodgers, at 35 years old, he's not quite the same as he was at 30, 31, 32. Nor should he be. And here's the other thing about Roethlisberger. His 37 is a weathered 37. I mean weathered. Even Drew Brees, like he has had a major shoulder injury. Now, for the most part, I think he's missed one game in his time in New Orleans. He's been consistently healthy. But is there a chance that, you know, from the information we know, he messed up some ligaments. He's going to need surgery or whatever on his thumb and should be back in 6 to 8 weeks or whatever. But there's a chance at 40 years old, this body just doesn't respond to it. Because I've noticed in my early 30s, my metabolism slowed. When I get injured now or tweak something, it just hurts a little bit longer. I think many people listening, if you're, you know, in your 20s, enjoy it. Because as you get older, things change. People always tell you that when you're young. You're like, sure, sure, sure. And then you realize, God, my metabolism has slowed down. You're like, I'm not 60, I'm 33. What the hell is going on? And you just have to change. Now, the thing about pro sports, forever, the most famous line in all of pro sports was, Charles Barkley uses this all the time on TNT, Father Time is undefeated. And forever, he was right. Like, guys would just get washed out of the league in all these sports. And now more and more, and part of it is technology's changed, the way we take care of our bodies changed. I'm not saying that these guys haven't earned the right to play at this age and aren't still playing at a high level, though Roethlisberger didn't quite look the same. Brees has been pretty damn good. You can say he's been a little questionable the last several games, but, you know, he's still a really good player at 40. I just think that we often think of these guys and forget the age, and you just can't forget that component of sports. I mean, Drew Brees is 40. Think how many guys that he plays on an everyday basis, on every Sunday, that are between the ages of 22 and 26. Some majority of the guys lining up against him on defenses. are first contract players or even second contract players are early into their second contract. Those are most of the guys in the prime of their career all over the NFL. And this guy's still doing it at 40. So, yeah, I mean, it was a freak injury. But to me, there's just no lock that he's coming back. Big Ben, like, this could be a career ender. I think sometimes we used to talk about that a lot in sports when a guy would get injured. Like, we may never see him again. We don't anymore because we just think that these doctors and the diets and the workout programs, oh, guy's coming back, guy's coming back, guy's coming back. Well, some guys don't. Some guys in the prime of their career get injured. I saw one in my backyard, Jerick McKinnon. Tears his ACL last year. ACL tear, right? He's 25, 26 years old. You're like, oh, you know, he's going to miss the year. That sucks, but he'll come back. Because ever since Adrian Peterson, everyone just assumes guys come back, especially guys in their 20s. You know what happened to Jerick McKinnon? He's never been the same. You know what happened to Jerick McKinnon? More than likely, he'll never play an NFL snap again. That sucks. That's shitty. But that used to happen all the time. And I think we think that that's crazy when it happens now. Because it is kind of weird. Because it doesn't usually happen to most players, right? Like Jimmy Garoppolo, tears an ACL, he's back the next year. No, just Carson Wentz, tears an ACL, back the next year. For the most part, the guys do bounce back. But when these guys get older, it's what I always say is going to be the downfall of Brady. Like ultimately, Peyton Manning's arm, he was just shot. He just couldn't throw the ball anymore. Like more than likely, that's not how Brady's aging. He's going to be able to throw it with a high velocity probably until he's like 50. I bet Brett Favre could just sit there and still just fling a dart 40 yards on a rope still to this day. But his body broke down. The other parts besides his throwing arm. And I think ultimately, knock on wood, I don't want it to happen because I still like watching Tom, but that's probably the downfall of Tom one day. So Breeze, Roethlisberger, like there's going to be a point in time where one of these guys, not both, this may never resurface again. It might be over for both of them. Even though you say Breeze just his thumb. Well, who knows if it never comes back? Because at 40 years old, maybe he can't recover from it. Who knows? I hope they come back. I like watching these two guys. Big Ben in his prime was one of my favorite players in the league. But I think we overlook age and where it's great for me and you. It's great in our businesses. We just keep making more money the older we get. And we keep gaining more wisdom. And, you know, life keeps getting better. In pro sports, it's typically the opposite. And I think we've gotten to a point where we just expect these guys to play forever. And we might get a hard lesson with some, you know, future Hall of Famers this season. I looked up something before I dove into this topic because I thought it actually, you know, has a decent parallel to what I'm about to talk about. Players' contracts and just the narrative that when Julio Jones signed his deal, which is basically a $66 million, which I don't have a calculator in front of me, but he got 64 of it guaranteed. It was basically an NBA-style contract. And people are like, oh, that's an executive texted Schefter that this is going to pave the path for players getting fully guaranteed deals. And I think Jerry Jones once famously said, you pay premiums for premiums, you'll never go wrong. It's when you try to go cheap that you get burned. Once upon a time, and I Googled this, I used this on this show, right? Instagram, my DMs. You know Facebook in 2012 bought Instagram for $1 billion, which at the time was pretty eye-opening. I Googled it before I was figuring out what I was going to talk about on this show. It's estimated, this could be off, that Instagram right now is currently worth about $100 billion. Now that does seem a little high, but it's clearly worth a lot more than the $1 billion they paid for it. And I believe the same thing in players. I have no problem, quote-unquote, overpaying great players. Steph Curry, LeBron James, Mike Trout, you name it. Just the best players in all of sports. Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, Julio Jones. Guys like Julio Jones have always had a huge amount of leverage in the NFL. Even the most player-unfriendly sport when it comes to contracts. The great players have always got paid, and they always will get paid. Now, Kirk Cousins was a little bit of an outlier. He got franchised twice. Then they let him hit the open market. There were several teams that needed a quarterback. And he got $85 million fully guaranteed. He clearly is not worth that. Now, you're only worth what someone's willing to pay you, of course. So he was, in theory, worth, because he was going to have a market with supply, demand, drive up the price, just basic economics, he was going to get a lot of money. But one thing's clear. He ain't a max quarterback. watching the Packers-Minnesota game. He does things. He became a full-time starter like halfway through. He started six games in 2014. Then every year since, he's been a full-time starter. So 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018 in Minnesota, and then this year in 2019 where he'll start every game. Just not good enough of a player. You know, he's not even a top 15 quarterback. He can have top 15 moments, but his downfall consistently always is one thing. In big spots, in the fourth quarter, when you have to make plays, he crumbles like a cookie. Like, he doesn't have a chance to make them happen. Julio Jones, who, quote-unquote, has always been a highly paid guy, literally, probably since Alabama, number one high school recruit, goes to Bama, Bama's first big recruit, becomes a dominant player at Bama, was a top six pick in the draft, a historic draft, that being in 2011. Then he goes on to the Atlanta Falcons, where he dominates, and he's got multiple contracts, and he just keeps dominating. He's been worth every penny. It's the reason why the Falcons don't even hesitate to guarantee him basically the entire contract. So is this going to change things in the NFL? Khalil Mack got $90 million guaranteed. Aaron Donald got $87 million guaranteed. Great players get a lot of money. Zeke Elliott, despite being a pain in the ass off the field, Jerry Jones like, just give him $50 million. Whatever. Because he's an elite player. If Zeke was Melvin Gordon, he wouldn't have got that. Like, I got news for you, Melvin Gordon. I begged you. Run and sign the contract. Well, what has happened two games into the season? You know what turns out? Austin Eckler may be just as good. Hot take, Austin Eckler might be better. So this notion that it's going to change the NFL for NBA-style contracts, they've always somewhat been that. And the difference between the NFL and the NBA are injury factors in the NFL are just gigantic. So NBA contracts, I also got news for you. Just because you sign an NBA contract doesn't mean it's a good contract. Think how many deals in the NBA are puke in your mouth bad of just quote-unquote really good players. Russell Westbrook, worst contract maybe in all of sports behind John Wall. Chris Paul, most of the worst contracts in sports are either in baseball and basketball, where the contracts are fully guaranteed. You know where the majority of not bad contracts are? In the NFL. Why? Because Kirk Cousins deals, if more and more of those type deals happen, there'd be terrible contracts all littered all over the league. Who would not benefit from that? Us as fans. Because for all you guys that DM me all the time, fans of different teams, you would be stuck with just these shitty players that you wouldn't be able to get away from. Do you know what the Minnesota Vikings wished if they had it all over again? They didn't guarantee the whole goddamn contract. Now, again, they did not have a choice. They had to because supply-demand, it was what it was. But you better believe they're kicking themselves right now. He's not good enough. They had one goal when they signed him. They thought they were going to win a Super Bowl because of him. You know one thing's clear? They're not going to win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins as a starting quarterback. Now they may make the playoffs this year. They may not. They're going to be in the mix because their roster is so good. But like Julio Jones, yeah, I give him fully guaranteed contract. Every time I play a game, more than likely, if Julio Jones is not the best player on the field, non-quarterback, he's going to be the top two or three players every single time we take the field. So if that's the case, and I say this all the time, with huge money, there are non-quarterback, maybe two to three guys a team. Some teams may only have one. Some teams may not have one. The good team probably have two or three guys that you don't hesitate to pay. And the only way you get screwed in the deal is if there's an injury. And that's welcome to sports. But this notion that the game's going to change dramatically is just not true. Because most players are not Julio. And quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins, the good ones, never hit the actual quote-unquote open market. But as we've seen, if you're a good quarterback, you don't even need to hit the open market. Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, soon to be Dak Prescott. They get an astronomical amount of money. And you could also argue that the NBA-style contracts, that's the quarterbacks. They get NFL-style contracts. They get nine-figure deals, which are really lucrative. They also get the most off-the-field endorsements. They get the most women. They get the most praise. They get talked about the most. They are the NBA stars of the league, the quarterbacks, and a handful of non-quarterbacks. And those guys, Julio, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, get historic amounts of money. But I got news for you. The majority of players are replaceable. Welcome to the NFL. Next man up. Injury. See you later. Undrafted free agent becomes a star. Seventh rounder becomes a starter. Fifth rounder becomes an all-pro. That's the way the league works. It always has and always will. So this notion that things are going to dramatically change contract-wise, I just don't see it. Because as we see with Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, soon to be Dak Prescott, who are better players than Kirk Cousins won't get a fully guaranteed deal like Kirk Cousins, mainly because they'll never hit free agency like Kirk Cousins. So it's fun to talk about and, you know, a cute thing to kind of be throw out there on social media, and it's going to get likes and retweets. And listen, I'm Schefter's my guy. I'm not taking a shot at that. Like, someone text him that. But Julio's an outlier. He's an exception to the rule. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's the number one overall recruit at 17. He goes to Alabama and just dominates. Guys like Julio are not a dime a dozen. They're once every 10 years. I mean, they don't come around that often. Like Odell Beckham, can't hold it. Check the two resumes. Doesn't hold a candle to Julio. Hopkins, maybe one day, but you know it's going to still take some time. Like, Julio's an all-time great. So, and I, don't get me wrong, I would pay DeAndre Hopkins. Like, to me, he fits the mold. Like, yeah, I'd give DeAndre Hopkins $80 million guaranteed if the deal was 85. I wouldn't even hesitate. He's that good, you know? But, like, that's who I'm talking about, Julio and DeAndre Hopkins. That might be the list. I mean, seriously. So think about that. That's what we're talking about here. Okay, let's fire around the NFL and just some things I jotted down, intrigued me, that I saw, just whatever. Lamar Jackson. Anyone that's listened to me for a while or listened to the show even recently, I was not a big Lamar Jackson guy. Now, I get, and I even said, I did a topic I think last week all about context, and context is key. Who you're playing, who you're doing it against. But I didn't ding Mahomes for 4 touchdowns in a quarter playing the Raiders, who are not going to be a very good team. So I can't totally ding Lamar for kicking the crap out of bad teams. Now, he did get Vance Joseph, who I said is the worst defensive coordinator in the NFL. I feel that. I feel very strongly about that. And that's probably one of my strongest opinions that I believe is a fact, is that Vance Joseph is the worst DC in the NFL. And Lamar kicked his ass, and Lamar Jackson dominated the Dolphins, who are actively tanking. But what you're seeing out of him, just he's calm, collected, his accuracy, he's been impressive. And I say it all the time, hell, I'll say it every week, even if I don't like you out of college, if you're a high character guy, I don't mind being wrong and then rooting for you. I'm doing the same with Josh Allen. I would not have drafted Josh Allen number 7 overall, but following his career on social media, I like the kid. I think he's just a high level guy, and he's clearly, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen have dramatically improved. Lamar, I mean, if somehow he'd go into Kansas City this weekend and win, what I said about Mahomes being winning back-to-back MVPs, Lamar Jackson would heavily throw his hat in the ring. So Lamar's been awesome. This is a big week for him, but even if it doesn't go well, like I'm impressed with Lamar. I really am. Eli Manning should be benched. When you are throwing away your season, and the Giants aren't actively throwing away their season. They just stink because their players aren't any good, mainly because you do things like trade pick 17 or 4. You trade Odell Beckham for pick 17, which becomes a nose tackle and a box safety. Team stinks. So when your team stinks, you have to find out what you have. You might as well put Daniel Jones in there. It's not like Eli has some streak going anymore. It's over. The streak ended a couple years ago. Just play Daniel Jones from here on out. And by the time you're listening to this, maybe they've announced Daniel Jones because Pat Shurmur wouldn't say one way or the other at the podium. But I think it's time. Like, Eli, your career's... I could actually see Eli being a backup somewhere next year, but it's over. Gardner Minshew, you know, he's a fun player. He really is. That final drive of him just making some things happen, he's fun. Now, is he that good? I don't know, but he's got some just natural pocket awareness. He really does. I don't know how many games the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win. It's hard. This guy was almost a graduate assistant for Saban a year ago, and now he's starting NFL quarterback. But I like him. I like his swag. I think most people just, he's kind of cool, you know? I'm rooting for him. I was texting with an NFL coach tonight. Yeah, I got a couple numbers in my phone. And I got a text over the weekend from a buddy in the NFL, and it just said, Mike Pettine's one of the best defensive coordinators in the league. So I text the coach in the NFL, and I just brought up Mike Pettine. And his response is, easily one of the best DCs going right now. I think Mike Pettine, and people have forgotten, this guy was Rex's right-hand guy when the Jets were beating the crap out of people. People forget that Mike Pettine and Rex Ryan and that defense went into Foxborough and won a playoff game. Like, that happened. Mike Pettine's good. And the Packers right now are a defensive team, as crazy as that sounds. Their defense is excellent. And my bald-headed brother, because when you're bald-headed, you're all part of the brotherhood. And I like Mike Pettine. Rooting for him. And for the first time in a long time, the Packers are good on defense. And he deserves Mark Murphy, Mike Murphy, whatever the Murphy's name is that is the president of the Packers. And it really answers, does he answer to nobody? Because they have no owner. I do give him credit for this. Like, hey, LaFleur, we're hiring you to be the head coach, but you don't have a choice in your defensive coordinator. We're keeping this guy. Smart move. I don't know if Seattle quite gets enough credit for how consistently good they've been. It was Pete Carroll's 68th birthday on Sunday. He got his 100th win as a Seattle Seahawk head coach. Since 2012, once they kind of turned it around, that was Russell Wilson's rookie year. And they named Russell Wilson the starting quarterback as a third-round pick, beats out Matt Flynn, heading into the season. Since 2012, two games into 2019, the Seattle Seahawks are 77-36. Say that out loud. 77-36. All they do is win. Really, all they do is win. And Pete Carroll is easily the youngest 68-year-old in the history of the world. I mean, he's 68. He carries himself like he's 43. I mean, like I said, I'm 35, and there's no chance I have as much energy as Pete. Really one of the unique sports personalities we've ever had. Like, Belichick is, I think, like 66 or 67, but, and I'd say even he's a little younger. You know, he could pull off like 58, 59, but he doesn't have quite Pete's energy. Now, he might from a work ethic standpoint, but Pete just bouncing around the walls, the California cool. He's just 77-36. You know, when Pete went to Seattle, for us on the West Coast and us Pac-12 homers, I understood it because USC was about to get popped, but it hurt. Like, what he had at USC was so special. I wanted him to stay there his whole career. But he was right, and he was destined for that stage. Because at the end of the day, listen, I love college football. I really do. And love Lincoln Riley, love Chris Peterson, love Nick Saban, love Dabo Sweeney. But the NFL is just a higher level. It really is, because you only get one first-round pick. And as Pat Hill told me back at Fresno State, you know, in the NFL, you get one first-round pick. At Fresno State, you get a bunch of like fifth and sixth rounders. When you're at Alabama, when you're at USC, when you're at Oklahoma, you get like 20 first-round picks. Now, you may, you know, have some guys that you want that you don't get there, but you get my drift. So it's just the parity there. And Pete wanted to get back and prove that he could do it. And he hasn't just proved he can do it. He's cemented. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach. National championship at USC, and just have that thing rolling. Then comes to Seattle, and once he gets his guys in there, absolutely kicks ass. But here's the most impressive part. Like with Jimmy Johnson, we saw Jimmy turn that thing around, right? With Dallas Cowboys and rattle off two Super Bowls, and really the third one he gets credit for. But could he have done it again? Like, think about Pete Carroll and the help from John Schneider, who I think is one of the best general managers in the NFL. They have this core group of guys, and they become one of the best teams in recent memory, have one of the great defenses of all time, right? Four straight years, the number one scoring defense. They were the shit. And then he flips it all. He literally gets rid of every single person except Bobby Wagner, and obviously his quarterback. But like, that's what they've done in Seattle, I don't think quite gets enough credit. As John Schneider said a couple years ago, when they went 9-7, you would have thought we went 2-14 around here. In the last year, everyone thought they were going to suck. They make the playoffs. This year, boom, 2-0 again. Now they're getting the Saints at home against Teddy Bridgewater. And that's another thing on Teddy Bridgewater. He actually wasn't bad that year that he was the Minnesota Vikings starting quarterback, and Blair missed ironically against Seattle, missed the kick. But, I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I just don't know. I don't quite see it. Now, it's different when you get a full week to prepare. And even this week, it's not going to be easy to judge him going up to Seattle. But the Saints are in trouble. And the NFC South is kind of in trouble. Is it crazy to say that with Breeze out now for the foreseeable future, the Carolina Panthers just screwed because Cam sucks? Atlanta, one of the most inconsistent teams you'll see. The Tampa Bay and Bruce Arians. I would not say this if Cutter was their coach, if Raheem Morris was their coach. They got Bruce Arians, a proven winner in this league, has a chance to win that division. is I never in a million years would have said this a week ago. I wouldn't have said this 3 days ago. But Drew Brees being out and just Atlanta, just something's a little off there. I'm telling you, keep an eye on Tampa Bay. Okay, let's get into the Middlecoff mailbag. You guys ready? I'm ready. What up, dog? How do you feel about total QBR versus QB rating? I don't recall any commentators or columnists ever mention QBR rating, which I feel is a better way to measure how good a quarterback played a game. Plus, who is the next coach to be fired? I'll be honest with you. I have no clue what any of that stuff means. I never really mess with it. When it comes to quarterbacks, for me, it was always, you know, attempts, obviously completion percentage. Just watch the game. You know, I don't really know what QBR is. I really don't. The one stat that did kind of grow on me from PFF was interceptable balls. Like, if you throw three or four interceptable balls and they were all dropped, but you went 25 of 35 for three touchdowns, like, that's... The numbers don't tell the entire story. Next coach to be fired... Ron Rivera. But I think he's earned enough to get the entire year. But if they just have a disastrous season, he's out. Jay Gruden's done. Does Jay Gruden even want to be there? I don't think he does. 49ers Staley question. Is Trent Williams the answer? Well, I think there's a couple angles to this. For those who don't know, Joe Staley broke his leg. They're starting really their fourth tackle because they lost their third tackle in the preseason. So here's the thing with Joe Staley. He broke his leg, but he's not out for the season, and they're not placing him on IR. So he's only going to miss five or six games, best case scenario. So if you trade for Trent Williams, which I don't even know if the Redskins would trade the 49ers Trent Williams because the 49ers are going back to Washington October 20th. If you trade a first round for him, well, then Trent Williams is your starting tackle the rest of the season. Does Joe Staley just go to the bench? Because McGlinchey's a right tackle. In a perfect world, you'd rather trade like a mid-round pick for like a fringe starter that then you could bench when Joe Staley goes back. But I'll be honest, I don't really know who that guy is. It's the hard thing with tackles, right? I guess you could, you know, if I don't think Kyle would like Big V, but the Eagles with Andre Dillard have an extra tackle, but I don't know if he really fits this scheme. But I mean, he's functional, but would the Eagles trade him for like a fifth round pick? Probably not. So I think it's kind of a weird spot. I don't really know what they do. I think the best thing to do is just play this game on Sunday. You're playing Mason Rudolph, you're playing Minkah Fitzpatrick and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and just try to win the game with this. I think his name is Justin or Jacob Skoll. I'm going to write an article on The Athletic about it for Wednesday. Text a bunch of people in the NFL. I mean, he was a fringe draft pick. He went sixth round. Texan buddies in the league, they had him like seventh to an undrafted free agent. Chance he just sucks. I mean, maybe one day he won't suck, but more than likely he's not ready right now. When you're a sixth round draft pick at that position, you usually don't start year one at left tackle, right? Sixth round draft pick, sometimes they start at guard, sometimes they start at running back, sometimes they start at defensive tackle. Occasionally a guy wins a job as like a nickel corner, but you don't often see, yeah, I'm a six-round draft pick. I was a rookie. I started at left tackle. That's usually something went wrong if that's the case. Hey, John, love the podcast. Appreciate it. Full disclosure, I'm a big Buckeye fan, and I've been pretty stoked about Justin Fields so far this year, but seems like no one in the national media is talking about him. How high is this guy's ceiling? Would you consider him a potential top NFL prospect if he develops into his potential? Well, I watched a little bit of the Indiana game, and they kicked the crap out of him. My issue is just consistency with accuracy. Clearly, he's a special athlete, a little on the smaller side. It's way too early for me to say NFL, like, top draft pick. I would say no right now. To me, he has good arm strength, doesn't always know where the ball's going. And let's watch him play. I don't have Ohio State's schedule in front of me. But clearly the Big Ten's pretty good. Iowa, Penn State, Wisconsin, obviously Michigan. You know, I know you don't always play all the teams every year, but I think we'll get a better feel. Like, I can't really judge him off Indiana. But once they get into conference play, he's going to be tested. 1,000% he's going to be tested. He's a big recruit. But here's the thing in the NFL, or I mean college football, we see a lot of these 4- and 5-star guys never live up to it. And the hype on him is extreme. Luckily, his team's good. What up, Middlecoff? Nice to meet you. Are you a 49ers fan? This is like a, whoa, this is like a porn thing. That's the thing with going into your DMs. You never know, quite know what you're going to find. Not really a 49ers fan, but it was cool having them practice at my school, Youngstown State, last week. It led to 2 good weeks for both of them. We got to 3-0, and your guys got to 2-0. Pretty cool having a connection here on your show. That's cool. As a question, what do you expect out of the Steelers for the rest of the season now that Ben is done for the year? Are you thinking semi-tank in hopes for grabbing Tua or Herbert, or do you expect them to have confidence in Mason Rudolph going forward? Now, obviously, this DM was sent before the news of Minkah Fitzpatrick. Clearly, they're not tanking, and clearly, they believe in Mason Rudolph. Now, I saw Chris Mortensen tweeting. Well, here's the other thing. Ben is signed, and Ben tweeted this, or maybe Ben didn't tweet this, but he released a statement. He's under contract for 3 years, and this is year 1 of 3. So he's going to be the starting quarterback next year. Now, like I said, him and Breeze, eventually one of these guys are not going to respond to the injury, and it's just going to be career over. So we may never see Ben again. And what if Mason Rudolph is good? Like, what if they rattle off a bunch of wins and win 8 or 9 games and they're competing for the playoffs? Maybe Mason Rudolph's our starter next year. So the tanking is not clearly happening, and it's not even possible. They don't have a first-round pick, so just Mason Rudolph or nothing. Question for the pod. With his accomplishments and the fact that he won't play the rest of the season, what do you think the outlook is for Ben's career? You think he retires or comes back? Getting a lot of Ben action here. Well, he said today that he's coming back. If he never came back, like if he never plays another down of NFL football, he's a Hall of Famer, and he goes down as one of the great Steelers of all time. Now he's controversial, clearly with some of the off-the-field stuff, clearly with him being a drama queen. But at the end of the day, when Ben, and from a personal standpoint, just on the field, no judgment off the field, I can separate the two. When he was on the field and he was younger and he was right, he was as good as it got, man. He was a freak show. He was a special, special player. We don't really see that guy anymore. He definitely can't move like it, and he shouldn't. I mean, he's 37 years old. But he, in his prime, was a pretty special dude. With Shurmur leaving the door open for DJ, it could be any week now if he takes Daniel over Eli. Assuming he's successful, a big assumption, will the Giants be able to rebuild their roster quick enough before him and Saquon need to be extended? I know it's not possible to win with both them on huge contracts. There is almost zero talent on defense right now. Really quick, that's kind of a misconception. You can have like 4 or 5 max players. You really can't. The cap, by the time those guys are getting paid, is going to be like $220 million. And I don't think Daniel Jones is going to be making like 40. Also, side question. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's why I play Daniel Jones right away. Like I said, it's time for Eli to be benched. See what you have with Daniel Jones. Saquon's a freak, man. He is. He's the only reason to watch the Giants right now. And he's a good reason to watch the Giants because at any moment he can bust off a 50-yard touchdown. He is remarkable. The power, the speed. I don't even know. I'm trying to think of, like, in my lifetime, because LT wasn't that quite powerful. He's basically like Adrian Peterson meets LT. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame back. Also, side question. I go to Michigan, but I'm not a diehard fan. While I disagree and know even if Harbaugh goes there is no better candidate to replace him, he doesn't have the school behind him right now. How many more... they're already turning on him? How many more chances does he get against OSU? He needs to win this year. You cannot lose to Ryan Day. I'm a Harbaugh defender. I like Jim. I actually used to love Jim. I think Jim's a badass. But you can lose to Urban Meyer. I mean, ideally you can't, but it is what it is. Urban's, probably a top 5 college coach ever. But you got to beat Ryan Day. You cannot lose to Ryan Day. So this is a big year for Jim Harbaugh to beat Ryan Day. Or really, they might turn on him, right? I have a thought that I've posed to 2 friends in NFL media, and they think I'm joking. Know that I'm not joking, but my premise is a little silly. Okay, I like where this is going. There must be a way to test twitchiness in wide receiver. Separation fits in every offense, and the twitchy guys have it for days. The one thing these guys seem to have in common is that they can dance. I'm not saying the combine should have a dance competition, but should it? I don't hate that. I just don't know how you would judge the speed of the dance. So if you did like go Dancing with the Stars with the wide receivers,
you just make them do some moves? How would you tell, like, what move at what speed? Like, when I do a drill, a cone-to-cone drill, like if I do the three-cone or the shuttle or the 40, everyone is measured on the same, you know, length. And the times are all relative based on what a good and bad time is, you know, because they're all doing the same thing. Like, how do you all do the same dance move? And then how would you quantify it? Like, the point of the combine is not to have them run around. It's to have them be run around and be timed. And then you're able to, people have been running the same drills for 50 years. You can put it into context. Well, how does this guy compare to that guy compare to that guy? Hey, John, big fan. I agree that the Niners have no excuses now, but losing Staley is big. Do they try to trade for Trent Williams from the Skins? It's tough rolling with a six-round rookie at left tackle. Staley is still playing. Yeah, like I said, I just see what this guy has for a game, and if it's a debacle, now the problem with it being a debacle is if your left tackle is just god-awful, there's a chance you can lose the game, just because if everyone else plays a good game and that guy sucks, you can lose. Luckily for the Niners, they have the best blocking tight end in the NFL. The other problem for the Niners is that blocking tight end is also their best wide receiver. Worst case scenario, you could just have Kittle stay with the left tackle just every play. Now, you're playing a man down in the passing game, but they won't be able to get there because Kittle's a badass, and Kittle could help the left tackle out big time. Now, that's worst case scenario, and you might just have to do that for a game to try it out. You're definitely going to have to do it early in the game to try it out. Logistical question. I heard today that the Saints are going from L.A. to Seattle for their next game. They don't go home. Question. Where do they stay? Where do they practice? Interested in the inner workings. Well, the 49ers just did this, and they stayed in Youngstown. They played Miami, and then they went to Ohio. I would imagine, I don't know, I'm just guessing, it's kind of hard. Like, they couldn't use the University of Washington practice stuff because Washington would be using it. Now, maybe you could time it out. You stay at a hotel, so basically everything at the hotel, you can do the meetings, you have all that stuff. Everything you need to do there non-practice, you can do at the hotel. Eat, meet, coaches' offices, you can set all that stuff up. Now, you do need to find a field, which there's a million high schools, and the good thing is high school football teams all either practice early in the morning or after school at like 3:30. So if you're an NFL team, you can run practice at like 10 a.m., and you can just go to the local high school, whatever, like one of the good powerhouse schools, and just go practice for a couple hours. Bus in, bus out. It's cool for the high school. Maybe let the kids come out and watch or see you. Maybe meet. You know, who knows? I know the 49ers, like that guy just emailed, they practice at Youngstown State. They practice at the facility. So maybe you could find, maybe when the University of Washington is not on the practice field, you could just practice there. That's what I would imagine. And you can use their weight room. They can facilitate that for you if you need it. So that's to me usually how it works. And it makes sense if you're Sean Payton. You don't want to go back to New Orleans, then come back to Seattle, just kind of stay, hopefully bond. Luckily for them, they're 1-1, but this is a shitty week for them. I mean, they lose Drew Brees, who's the best player in the history of the franchise. And I don't know if he's still quite that guy, but he's pretty damn important, man. I just don't see how Teddy Bridgewater goes to the plays in Seattle and wins this game, unless he's dramatically better than what we just witnessed in L.A., because I had him on the second TV, because that game was pretty crappy for giving all the hype. I mean, that game was supposed to be sweet, and then Drew Brees gets hurt, and it was just kind of a dud. And I kept looking up there, and just he's slow to react. It felt like he was holding on the ball a little bit too long. I mean, he's never had a great arm. Seattle, your first start in a long time? God, that's tough. Now, I know it's not the Legion of Boom, but that place is going to be rocking. They're feeling themselves right now. They're 2-0. Pete Carroll's birthday. Football gods feel like they're on Seattle's side. So, Teddy Bridgewater, Teddy Two Gloves. We're going to need a big effort. Now, they're actually kind of lucky, though. They're all staying together. So, they're all at the hotel. Teddy can live with Sean Payton, basically, and spend a lot of time with them getting ready. So can the offense. Now, if I'm Alvin Kamara or Michael Thomas, like, just throw me the ball, man. I know what I'm doing. I'm not going to put in extra time in the meeting room. Just, Teddy, throw me the rock. Appreciate everyone listening. Always appreciate everyone chiming in on Instagram. Have a good week. If you're a Steeler fan, you know, hold your head high. If you're a Dolphins fan, just, I don't know, get ready for the Miami Heat season. Start watching some Netflix. I feel bad for you. If you're, you know, that sucks. But enjoy the week. Hopefully you enjoy the show, and I'll see you Friday.